little bit. I have a bit of a tan, so I'm kind of dark. I'm trying to lighten up my face so everyone can see.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Can you record it? Record it?
I am recording it, I think.
Oh, okay, sorry.
No, it's okay. I usually try to, but you know what? You were perfectly intuitive about it because I hadn't recorded the very beginning. So thank you. I hope that you'll remind me in the future.
I started recording when you started the practice.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you, sweetheart. So let's just take, and everybody mute again, lower left corner, mute your microphone. And since we're dealing with unlearning, and Murshid refers to aspects of the mind, let us tune to the air element, which is the air, the element of mind, for just a moment. Breathe in gently through the mouth, and out gently through the mouth. And let us begin this special class on unlearning, which is so relevant to even what we're doing now. We are unlearning ways and patterns that we've been in most of our lives for the sake of health, well-being, and protection of others as well as ourselves. So it's a whole new way of being in the world. And for those of us that have an active inner life, it's a great opportunity to practice, practice, practice. So with palms upward, let us perform the Sufi invocation of Hazrat Anai Khan, saying this prayer with great devotion and invoking all the master saints and prophets. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Now take your palms as if a golden cup filled with love and light, and offer this to the world, and through your own being, filling yourself up, filling the cup with love and light. I'd like to ask, because I don't see him, is my friend from New Delhi, Kasif, online? If you are, could you unmute for a moment and let us know you're here? Doesn't seem he could make it. He's a wonderful person that's been sharing beautiful teachings of old Sufism, one of which was "Thank you, God, for everything." I think you all probably got a copy of that. He translated from Urdu for us. So again, the subject is on unlearning, and this is the second part of the class, and we'll see. We'll see how far we get. We may continue into June, because May will be something different. We'll be doing the Ozark Camp virtually, and I'll send out some information about that later. So this is from Sufi Message Volume 4 by Inayat Khan, and it's on mental purification. And Murshid says this: "It is most difficult to forget what one has once learned. Learning is one thing, and unlearning is another. The process of spiritual attainment is through unlearning." Now, we've spoken about this many times before, even in the very objective world of a scientific exploration, there's something of subjectivity there. But we only understand our world by the tools that we measure it by. And therefore, we need to develop, is everyone okay? You can hear? Everybody can hear? Okay, great. We have to remind ourselves that sometimes we need new tools. And in the same way, we have to remind ourselves, maybe we don't have all the answers. Maybe we have to unlearn in some way so that we can be open to new knowledge that maybe defies even the rational mind. Some of you, I know, we've had those conversations where you say, oh, it can't be. It doesn't make any sense. Well, spirit world doesn't always make sense. But we have a belief. And we have a faith, and when we have that, it starts to make a different kind of sense. So Mirshad goes on to say, spiritual attainment from beginning to end is unlearning what we've learned. But how does one unlearn? He asked. What one has learned is in oneself. So how do we work on refining it, transforming it, opening it? And he says, one can do it by becoming wiser. That's a big thing to say. How do we become wiser? Well, Mirshad's going to give us some clues later. But Mirshad does give us this clue. The wiser one becomes, the more one is able to contradict one's own ideas. Now here, let me give you an example. And I've given this example before. Isn't it true? Perhaps you've read a passage or a poem or a prayer, and all of a sudden you say, oh my goodness, I understand that in a whole different way. Has that happened to everyone? So in a way, that's what we're talking about here. We let go of what we believed or thought we knew to gain a greater understanding. And some of that is quite natural within our development. So the less wisdom one has, the more one holds on to one's own ideas. We dig in and we get stubborn. I'm probably the only one that does that. I'm sure none of you do. In the wisest person, there's a willingness to submit to others. We don't like to submit to others, do we? We don't really want to listen to another's point of view. We like feeling that we're right and righteous. But Mirshad's saying, the wise submit to others. Yes, and Rumi does that very well. He gives us a lot of good advice, I would say. So the reason is that the wise person can easily give up their own thought, and the foolish holds on to it. That is why a person does not become wise, because a person sticks to their own ideas. And that is why they do not progress. And so I think all of us here have this idea, or we wouldn't be here. We had this longing to understand life and our inner life in a different way. And that propelled us or drew us to take initiation on this path. And Mirshad will talk about this in a bit, but I can just say here, perhaps our teachers have given us things to read. And perhaps at first they were perplexing to us. And just like I mentioned a few moments ago, maybe we've come to a greater understanding of some of those things, and God willing, we continue to open our understanding. But had we not taken that step, we wouldn't have grown in the same way. We wouldn't be progressing. So I think that we are quite fortunate that life is open to us in this way. Now, Mirshad says, mental purification is the only method by which one can reach the spiritual goal. So it's our thoughts And we fight it. We wrestle. We have to wrestle with the conditioning of our lives and what we think we know. And ultimately, what is there in giving it up? What is there in giving it up? One has to ask. And who or what's hanging on to something? So Murshid gives us some reasons or ways, methods, I'll say, methods. He gives us methods for this mental purification. Number one, and we talked a little bit about this the class was in February, and that is to take another's point of view. It's said that the whole premise of Sufism is based on the fact of being able to have two points of view, one's own point of view and the view of another. We're seeing a beautiful drawing, Shamsuddin is drawing our attention to the a painting by Murshid Kabir Kitz. So Murshid Kabir is with us here. So Murshid goes on to say, in order to accomplish this, one has to look at another's point of view. I don't know if I completed that thought, but Sufism is based on this, the willingness to take one's own point of view and the point of view of another. So that's very, very important. And then he says, in order to accomplish this, one has to look at another's point of view. For in reality, every point of view is one's own point of view. The vaster one becomes, the greater the realization that one comes to, and the more one sees that every point of view is all right. Every point of view is all right. It may not be our point of view, but it's all right. If one is able to expand oneself to the consciousness of another person, one's consciousness becomes as large as two persons. And now listen to this. And so it can be as large as 1,000 persons when one accustoms oneself to try and see what others think. So this is a kind of a vastness or a sense of all-encompassing. And so here I'd like to work with a Wazifa. I don't think we've worked with it as a group in our Mirid circle, but it's a lovely practice, and it's one that I remember doing many, many years ago with Pir Vilayat and I, Khan and Retreat. And this practice was intended in the retreat to do exactly what we're talking about, to make our view wider and more vast, to expand the horizon. There's a quote in of an Pir Murshid Night Khans that says, the more we approach the horizon continues to recede. So just as soon as we are about to feel that we grasp the knowledge, that moves again, and we need to become wider and deeper and vaster to embrace it all. So we're going to work with this practice. It's Wasi. Wasi. And it's spelled W-A-S-I, but there's a little apostrophe after the I. So it's easy to say Yawasi anyway. It's okay. You just say it with your heart and the intention, but there is a little at the end, so it's really wasia. So it's not really an ah, but it's a little pause that kind of sounds like a very short ah. So it's wasia. There's a little guttural stop there. So you can work with that, but we'll do it together. Now the first 11 times we'll say aloud, and we let ourselves take some breath and some time so that we feel this expansion. So I'm going to do it the first 11 times, and then we'll stop. And I want you to observe within. Look at the mind, look at the body, look at one's thoughts and one's feelings. And I'll tell you a little bit more about this Wasifa, and we'll return to it and do it again. Is that okay with everyone? So we begin the first round, and we'll just do it 11 times here for expediency's sake, and then we'll have a silence. And we begin when we're saying the Wazifa aloud, the sacred name aloud, with beginning with Yah. Most of you, I think you all know that. So here we begin. Yah-Wazir. 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 Take a few breaths and just imagine one's consciousness, one's auric field, one's etheric field expanding so that one begins to embrace all, that one feels this quality of boundlessness. And that we have this power and knowledge and mercy and generosity, which is boundless. Knowledge and mercy and generosity that is boundless. Now, this practice also helps us in a very important way because it helps us to release old boundaries. And who doesn't want to be free of those things that make us feel so constricted? It helps us to work against rigid, habitual boundaries. I don't know about you, but I have work to do in that way. And I believe that I probably will, who knows, the rest of my life. But if I try to approach it in a mindful way and expand, to embrace that too, then I can heal it and move on. Now I'm reading from a little book that someone gave me. I don't know if Guyon's online, but I want to thank you, Guyon, for giving me this little book. It's by Neil Douglas Klotz, also known as Murshid Sadi, and it's called The Sufi Book of Life. The Sufi Book of Life. And Murshid Sadi, writes about wazifas as like pathways to greater understanding, pathways into those parts of ourselves, pathways into seeing it reflected back to us in the world. And this is what he says about wazir. If life calls us to a greater capacity to feel deeply, we have two choices. One is to stretch, the other is to break. If life calls us to a greater capacity to feel deeply, we have two choices. One is to stretch, the other is to break. The training of the heart in Sufism begins with the interplay of need and capacity. Need and capacity. So the need to stretch and the capacity to increase, to not be broken. Need and capacity. The student brings the need and the guide brings the capacity. So the guide can give you tools through either practice or perhaps a lesson in the interaction that one has with their guide. Hopefully, it is all for the benefit of you. So now let's do this practice, Wasi. We'll do it again 11 times, and we'll just do it on the in-breath and the out-breath without the Yah. So it'll be like this. I'll do it a couple times, And then we'll start again and do it 11 together. So, so let's begin together. Expand, stretch, embrace all, include yourself. And now we'll just breathe in Wasia and out Wasia. And as we do this, again, just continue to stretch, feel at ease, expand. Feel the increase of your capacity to embrace and to have this kind of quality of boundless generosity and knowledge, and mercy. Of all, and don't forget to include yourself. We also are this consciousness that needs to be understood and embraced. Again, trying to unravel the conditions of the mind. I think if I believe what people tell me and from my own experience, we've all had this, but unlearning to be ye as little children, unlearning. So now we just breathe in Wasia and out Wasia, silently on the breath, feeling that increased capacity. Ya Wasia. So those in the This Myriad Circle and anyone else that would like to take this up as a practice, please do so with respectfully consulting with your guide. This is very helpful. And in these days, again, we may need to develop different capacities, different methodologies, different ways of seeing the world, different ways of being in the world. But this is a long-term practice of trying to, again, unwind the conditioning and get larger, get bigger in the sense of our understanding, our mercifulness, in terms of feeling the dropping of constrictions that keep us bound in limited thinking. And so, again, this is very, very good. I wouldn't recommend it. You go do this and then try to navigate the grocery store. But in your home, in the safety of your home, do this practice and take it deeply into oneself, seeing oneself expand, expand, expand. And then make sure to tuck your wings in appropriately when you need to. So step number two, Murchet gives us this. This is an interesting one because it's paradoxical perhaps to some, but again, those of us that have lived long enough, and I think everyone on this call has, you've come to see the reality of what Murshid's saying. So here he says number two, that number two in helping to work on mental purification. Look for the right in the wrong and the wrong in the right. Look for the right in the wrong and the wrong in the right. So Murchet goes on to describe this as the next step in mental purification is to be able to see the right of the wrong and the wrong of the right. He even goes on to say, and the evil of the good and the good of the evil. It is a difficult task. But once one has accomplished this, one rises above good and evil. One must be able to see the pain in the pleasure and the pleasure in the pain, the gain in the loss and the loss in the gain. Mental purification means that impressions, mental purification means that impressions, such as good and bad, right and wrong, gain and loss, and pleasure and pain, these opposites which block the mind must be cleared out by seeing the opposites of these things. So this maybe is a trivial example to you, but at one point in my career, I had the opportunity to be a professor at one of the premier art and design schools in the country. It was ranked really among the top three. So that was good. That was success. But the problem was, and we were challenging ourselves not to rest in that and rely just on the reputation. We knew that every day we had to continue, and every year we had to continue to strive to maintain, if not even excel beyond the previous reputation. Because if we didn't, slowly, slowly one starts to go backwards. So there's the rise and the fall. And we've seen it in politics. We've seen it in the entertainment industry. We see it in the sports world. People reach their pinnacle and then the next step is to go down. But that doesn't always mean one is failing. It's a change. And one needs to find good even in that. You know, as we age, we go through that too. But there's some beauty in all of it. I remember one time I was at the museum here in Kansas City, which was quite lovely. And I was with a friend and colleague of mine, a sort of well-known designer who's actually in the history books. He's kind of living history. And he's very insightful in his way. And quite brilliant, as you might imagine. And we were there together, and there was this image, some of you may have seen it. It was of a yogini, a woman practitioner. We were in the East Asian temple area. And this woman was sitting in a kind of, not really a lotus position. She kind of had her legs crossed, but up a little bit. She had a drum in her hand and a hand on her hip. And she was completely emaciated. To some people, that would have been a horrific sight. And he looked at her, and he kind of did her hands as if around her face. She's not a very large statue. And he said, "She's beautiful." He saw the beauty in that. And so he saw the inner beauty of what she was accomplishing with her practice. So can we see that beauty? Can we see the beauty and the repulsive even? I remember my first trip to India, we were near the Darga of Anayakhan, which, by the way, there's a lot of prayers that are needed for that area. There's conflict that's arising in India between Muslim practitioners and others. So, and some of the conflict, I don't know if you know that area where the Darga is it was originally, and it still is, it's a kind of refugee camp where the Muslim of the Muslims that were allowed to stay in India were kept. And it's kind of a contained area. So they allowed some people to stay there because there are Sufis in the area and there are the resting places or the dargahs of the Sufis. But there is now conflict arising. So, you know, Murshid, his atmosphere, and Nizamuddin Ali's atmosphere and others that are there, I'm sure will offer some sense of peace or things coming right. And there too, even the conflict, what is arising from that? Can an understanding come from that? We'll see. Human nature always has something to play in it. But at any rate, the right and the wrong and the wrong and the right. So looking at things from two points of view. I was back at the Dharga, my first trip, and there was this puddle that, I'm sorry to be indelicate, but it was like, you know, people had been peeing and things in that area. And someone had taken a string of marigolds and it was floating there. And I took a picture of it and someone asked, why in the world would you take a picture of that? And I said, it's so important to remember. Here is both something repulsive and something beautiful, and they coexist. This is how life is. And this is having those two points of view. I still have that photo. It's an important photo for me to look at. So Murshid goes on to say that these opposites, when we have these two polarities in our minds playing against each other, this is a block in the mind. And it must be cleared out by seeing the opposite of all things. One can see the enemy in a friend and the friend in an enemy. We can recognize poison in nectar and nectar in poison. That is the time when life and death become one. And you know, another great saying of the Sufis is, die before death. And this is not to be taken literally. This is to be taken in the sense of this small self, these small thoughts, these confining manners, letting go of them. And when we do, we have this capacity of the walls. It's not just that the doors and windows are open, but the walls have been kicked down. And we can have a clear view. So opposites, he says, are no more opposites. And that is called mental purification. And those who come to this stage are like living sages. It's so easy to say, but Murshid understood the difficulty. He struggled with it himself. And we now can have this opportunity by looking at this and saying, what's the right and the wrong and the wrong and the right? And perhaps when we have an opportunity to talk, I'm sure you have some wonderful examples that perhaps you can share. But there's this other beautiful practice, and this one, again, I'm not sure we've really done this as a group, but the practice is called, the divine name or the divine quality is Halim. Halim, H-A-L-I-M, but pronounced, if it's easier to write, H-A-L-E-E-M. And so the emphasis is on the lim, Halim. And Halim is this quality of calm abiding. And it is the manifestation of healing wisdom. So the view gets large, and then we look into that view, and we have this wisdom, God willing, that can heal ourselves and heal the atmosphere and be available to others who are seeking a kind of healing and acceptance. Halim is wisdom that brings balance and harmony. And again, from Murshid Saadi's book called The Sufi Book of Life, Murshid Saadi describes it in this way. And see how it relates to Wasi in a subtle way. He says, dissolving tension and freeing ourselves from all conceptions of the past. This is why Sufis emphasize unlearning. What we need is not more information, but a deeper knowledge of ourselves. Dissolving tension and freeing ourselves from conceptions of the past. This is why Sufis emphasize unlearning. What we need is not more information, but a deeper knowledge of self. And Murshid Sadi also says this in this passage on the divine quality Haleem, that it's a state that descends upon us in tune with the purpose of our lives. A state that descends upon us in tune with the purpose of our lives that can free us from the rigid view of who we think we are. So let us do this practice together. And we begin again. We'll do it 11 times. And if you'll permit me, I'll say it a few times, and then just so you can hear it, and then we'll begin together. Yahali. Watch my mouth. Yahali. Notice that I'm putting the lips together and letting that hum continue. Again, though, the emphasis is on eem. So listen again. Yahali. Yahali. Feel what's happening. See the consciousness. Feel it. Feel it open, expand. Feeling calm, feeling balanced, feeling harmony. Because this is activating different parts of the register or the energy fields. Just be it. Don't worry about really feeling anything. Just be open and be aware, be mindful. So let us begin together 11 times. Yahali. 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 Last time. Yahali. Now on the whisper, we breathe in. Haleem, Haleem, and then we'll breathe out, Haleem, Haleem. Taking in this healing wisdom, invoking it from the atmosphere and allowing it to move through us. And we begin. We get started here on the right place on my beads. All right, Haleem. Now just silently breathe in Haleem and out Haleem, invoking manifestation of healing wisdom, balance and harmony within and without. Yeah, honey. Now, we've been going about 40 minutes, and I still have three more points to make, but I feel it's a good place to stop because who amongst us doesn't have our work cut out for them to see the point of view of another? The good and the bad and the good, the success and the failure and the sex, the poison and the nectar and the poison. It's enough, isn't it, for 1 month, for until we meet again to work on. Would you say so? I think so. And we have, if you wish to continue, these two practices. And of course, I'll be sending out a little study guide and the video and audio for you to continue with this practice. Wasi, ya, wasi. And Yahalim. They work beautifully together. You could even do them together, but you can do them individually first, and then if you wish to continue, you could do Yahwasi Yahalim. Yes, is that right? Let's see. Or maybe Yahalim Yahwasi if you're doing them together. But I would do them individually first, Wasi, Halim, then Halim, Wasi. So bringing in this manifestation wisdom and bringing the capacity out and letting it flow through you in an all-encompassing way. So, hi, Sitara. I'm gonna change my view. I've been just looking at speaker view. So I've been watching myself. Now I'm going to put myself on gallery view. And I don't know if I'm even seeing everybody, but it's so wonderful to see everyone here. And I'd like feedback, questions, comments, sharing. I'm looking up close because I have one contact in and one contact out, so I don't always see everybody. I can't read very well, so I... Are you, matey? So, okay. There's Guyon. Thank you for being here and for the book. It's been very helpful. Been loving it, studying it. Okay, let's see. So, anyone have any? Oh, Rabia, I have to know how's the job. May I ask you that? Good. Thought about you many times, been praying for you.
I'd like to say something, Nuria.
Yes.
I think Wasi is a perfect practice to be doing at this time in our lives when we could be contracting because we're isolated and we're sheltering in place and we're socially distancing, where all of us like to be together and hugging one another and holding one another, and we can still do that within our own hearts. But Wasi is that place where we're able to, you know, take everything in. You know, we become big instead of small, but not big in the ego sense, but big in the beloved sense. So I think it's a great practice for all of us to do at this time, with life how it is in this moment.
Well, and a little bit later in the paper, and maybe I'll share that with the point is you'll see the reference and you can maybe read the whole thing, although I would like to continue along this line. And the thing is, if we think about things, you know, think about the effectiveness of homeopathic medicine. We're taking a little bit of something that we're trying not to get sick from. So again, if we think about, you know, when I when I go to the grocery store, I tell the people at the checkout stand, first of all, I thank them so much for being there for us, and the people that are stocking the groceries, and, you know, just the helpfulness and the care that they're giving so that we can have proper food and so forth. And I always thank them. And then I always say, when you breathe in pure, clear air. And when you breathe out, let anything bad be, you know, go out without doing harm to others. I mean, I always just say that. And they look at me and they say, thank you. You know, I said, just breathe in purity and breathe out whatever you don't want to keep, letting it be transformed into purity also. And we can be those lessons. We can help people. I mean, everyone knows I'm a little out there, so I say whatever might be on my mind with people. And it seems to lift them up. And being willing to, you know, I yell at the Amazon people here as they go by, the delivery guys. I said, you guys are our soldiers. You're our heroes. You're on the front lines. Thank you. And they honk their horn and wave because it's really true. You know, everybody's a hero in their own way. And I have to ask, excuse me, but I have to ask you, Sitara, how is Augustine? Is he well now? Is he better? Unmute yourself, lower left corner. Here, maybe I can unmute you. There you go. Is Gus doing better? Whoops, hold on. There you go.
Yes, he's much better. He had a little, we had a little scare because there's so much pollen in the air because of spring, that he had a little attack again. And we was like, oh no. But he couldn't breathe. But then it was just one day. And but now he's almost, well, he can't go running, but he's almost normal. He can work. He works from his bed and his desk. And yeah, thank you so much for asking.
Well, we send, and I hope you don't mind if I say something, but Sitara's husband, and she has two small children, he's in his early 30s. And they're in Belgium. And he was hospitalized and on a respirator. He was in, you know, intensive care. He was very ill with this virus. So it was scary. And Sitara just kept the best attitude through it all and kept the children going, and they self-quarantined. But we're so happy he's back at home. So when you think of her beautiful face, think of her husband, and who's a lovely person, and their children, and just send them some love and light and healing energy.
Well, you're really sweet because the prayers really helped, I think. I think they really, really helped.
I think they really, I believe in it wholeheartedly. I've been dealing with, and some people know, some minor health issues, comparatively speaking, but I know when people, there was someone, this friend of mine from India, and he said, send me a photo, because I had some problems with my knees and my eyes. And he sent me a photo and I'll pray. And then he said, right away, he said, how do you feel? And I was standing up and I said, it feels like there's light in my knees and there's no pain. It was really, it was immediate. So,
This is Amelia. Yeah, this is a kid. Oh, Fiona's on my lap. She's here.
Oh, God bless. Look at him with their red hair.
Lovely. Yeah, with red hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay. So we'll hi baby. Hi honey. Hi. Woohoo. He's talking to me. Hi. Okay, I'm gonna mute you. Sitara, maybe Gemma and Shams, you can kind of see if people are wanting to say something, or just unmute yourself in the lower left corner. And I'm not sure about the phone how that works, but you probably see a microphone and you can unmute and make comments.
I wanted to make a comment. So this is my third Sufi Zoom meeting in the last 8 days. So we did the whole Aramaic Lord's Prayer with Saudi's Aramaic community. I did it outside standing up with 45 people on Zoom. And then the Ozark Sufi community did a virtual dance of universal peace. And it's not like being there, but it's something different about being on Zoom. And it's a whole new interesting feeling that's just about as good as being there, but I can't describe it, that it's so different than being there. And I think it has had some advantages and some deepness in my heart in doing it this way. And thank you for doing it. I just feel so in tune. I work alone most of the time, so being isolated. I've not been to the grocery store because I have adult children nearby that won't allow me out of the house or near them. They bring me groceries. Wonderful. So I got my dogs and I got my work and neighbors wave and talk. So it's been a really wonderful retreat time, and this really helps. Blessings.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we were one of the first to do it, and everyone thought we were crazy. Now everybody's doing it. I was talking with Pierre Shabda yesterday on the phone, and we were talking about, you know, these classes. He has a class coming up in a few hours, and I had sent out something on one of the mail lists that's connected with the Rouhaniyat, and he was concerned people would get confused or there was too much. I said, it's okay. I just send a note saying disregard the message and, you know, encouraging people to go to his class. Or I just basically apologized for double, kind of seeming to double book, even though it wasn't. And I have to say, it was interesting. More people wrote me about that than they write me about other things saying, you didn't double book. I was like, thank you so much. We know. But I did say, I said to Pierre Shabda, I said, oh my gosh, I haven't gone to the Zooms like you have, Sura, but I'm a bit overwhelmed with seeing how many there are. It's like everybody's Zooming. But you know, I want to say something about it, how you're talking about something happens. One of my, I don't know, insights, inspirations, patterns, I don't know what you want to call it. I always worked with a guide who lived far away from me. And I always felt that it expanded my consciousness because I had to kind of reach out towards them to feel that connection. And I was never sorry that I didn't have a local guide. It made me, I think, really strong and able to connect in a different way. And I think Zoom does that a bit, you know? Yeah, we reach out in a different way.
Yes.
Anyone else? Have we lost some people? It looks like maybe people are exiting.
I have something I would like to share.
Sure.
Something that I have discovered with the physical distancing, and in particular, since we have, since there has been an option and now a healthcare-based recommendation to wear masks when we are out of the house. What I discover as both a need and a capacity is that I am using my eyes to communicate, to connect, to receive, to express. It's so interesting that with the need to wear or the choice to wear a mask, we've lost the expression in the rest of our faces to share because we cover it with a mask. But as you say, in with that loss has come this tremendous gain. Yes. to the eyes being the window of the soul. We are able to, it's so much more intentional now, and to develop, I find, that capacity to still connect, not by a hug, all these luxuries that we have had and that we have lost, or necessities. We're like little weeds. We're going to grow up and hug each other in different ways, and so much the eye contact, the glance, as some famous Sufis would say. And I for myself, when I think of my own past, and I used to work as a veterinarian in an emergency hospital, and what is happening today has made me remember. In fact, when those pets would come in, dogs, cats, even iguanas, birds, rabbits, I realized it, I think now, how much I depended on my communication, on my connection initially for them as my patients and for me to get information from them about their symptoms, their dis-ease, how much I relied actually on nonverbal communication through eye contact with these sentient beings that through the eyes. Even now when I go out daily, not skiing anymore, but a jog or a walk, and people will be outside with their pets on a leash, and I find myself drawn, even drawn first to their pet through the eye contact, and they get it. They get it right away. When you're looking in their eyes and they are looking back at you through their eyes, through their little window of the soul, that's when the friendship starts. That's when the hug, it happens. That spark of life.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, I've mentioned that before in some classes, having lived in the Middle East and then spent a good deal of time in Morocco and Turkey, both as well as the United Arab Emirates when it was just becoming the United Arab Emirates. You know, many of the women there are veiled, and they do wear the veil over the mouth. And I have found that to be very true. Their eyes dance, and you can, even without, you know, we don't speak the same language, but we connect. There's a connection there. And it's just right, you know, it's just through the glance. It's like you can see the curiosity, you can see the interest, you can see the love. It just comes through. It doesn't need words. It doesn't need anything else. It's there, and it's very beautiful. And I know that's true with animals as well. Our vet always knew the condition of our animal without a lot of testing even. I mean, they always did that. They could tell by looking in their eyes. So it is important what you say, Azima. Thank you.
I just wanted to say hello to Gabrielle. I was in a Zoom class with her yesterday and I looked down. I don't think I knew her before, and I saw her yesterday. So thank you. It's amazing how these Zoom classes just bring us all together. So thank you.
It was nice to be here, and I don't think we have too much of Zoom connections. I think Zoom connections are really helping us to stay strong, because we all need to hold for this inner column of light. And I was wondering, what made me, as like, you know, the Bosnian mom, now to connect to some spiritual things and stuff, especially because I was never religious. I was always afraid of anything what is, you know, beyond things that you see. And now, in this bad situation, I see what is good in this bad situation. It is that I was called to connect to spirituality, because this is what is making me now strong. Like in before, I would be so afraid. I would be panicking. I would be crying. Maybe I would already be dead. But because I have this inside me to hold for this, I'm in perfect peace.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That is very, very significant. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you.
Any questions about the practice? Anything that you'd like to share?
Anything? Well, I would like to share something.
Sure.
The unlearning thing reminded me of the saying "Memento Mori," and the Romans, when they had a party, they would carry a body around, dead body around, in order to, yeah, to remind them of the opposite. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sophia. I know when I was living in India in the Tibetan Buddhist community, you know, in one of the refugee camps in Dharamsala, where His Holiness lives, whenever an animal died, they would drag the body of the animal so that you'd have to, you could not get into the temple without stepping over the dead animal, precisely for that purpose, to remind ourselves of the impermanence of life, and also to pray for those that have passed before us and those that are suffering. It sounds grotesque, but it's very, it enters your mind. And I remember hearing His Holiness the Dalai Lama say, every time he saw an animal, maybe on the side of the road, he thanked the being for reminding him again of the nature of impermanence, that this life is short, and to be mindful of each moment and how important it is for us to do our practice. So thank you for bringing that up.
I'd like to speak for a second.
Yeah.
I found a book that is very helpful to me, although looks like this group maybe not need the book yet. It's the Ram Dass book. Let's see if I can make this show. It's still here. And it has a lot to do with what you lose when you're aging. And I find it a very worthwhile book.
Very.
And I say, most of you probably don't need it yet.
Well, I don't know. We're all going to need it if we don't need it. And is it called Still Here? Is that what you said, Nuranisa?
Yep, still here.
Still here, okay.
In other words, he's still alive, and that was after his stroke.
Mm-hmm.
He was had really lost a whole lot.
He had.
But there's some good stuff in here.
He continued to do so much, though, even with that incapacity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. Good recommendation.
Sura had her hand raised. Yes, Lynn.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. It's so good to see you all. I'm like some of you I haven't seen for years, and it's just like such a blessing to see your faces. And the teaching it's so strong in my heart. And I wanted to ask you and to share with you, because this has been Easter, was just this past, Sunday. And of course that brings up a lot of things out of people's past, but, I shared this with my church and, which was a Zoom, of course. And I just wanted to share it with you and ask you, Nuria, because I think it's kind of the same thing that you're saying about the Sufi message, but said in a different way. But the real meaning of crucifixion is to crucify the false self that the true self may rise. And I'm thinking, is this what the unlearning means, is to get rid of the ego stuff so that the spirit and the column of holy light that's inside of us comes out, rather than our own meanness thinking. Is that, and I read this every day, it's on top of my washing machine.
It's really beautiful. I think that's really very true. I don't know if Paul's still here, but we were talking about that, how, every day we have an opportunity to join with the Spirit of Christ in crucifixion. And, we often complain and kvetch about those challenges, but yet it is those things that can soften us and can help us grow. And, it's a way of unifying with the Christ mind, So I think it's very important. In Sufi terms, they give it the term fana, which is annihilation or we could say crucifixion, and Baca is a resurrection. It's beautiful because it's absolutely based on this concept of Jesus crucified and resurrecting again.
And I like, I have a strain going because I'm off work for 7.5 months because I'm, I think mainly because of my age and being on an airplane, it's I'm in the group that, you know, don't go, don't do that group. Yeah. And so I'm connecting with other flight attendants and, you know, so we were, you know, somebody's going to New York and they're going, you know, somebody's daughter-in-law going to New York for a month to help out. Mm-hmm. And so everybody's, a lot of people started praying. And I think this goes to what you were saying about seeing the, see the point of view of another, but the prayers kind of devolved into the bloody blood of Christ. And I found myself getting a little judgmental, or when I see these people in real life, I'm like, is it going to change my relationship? Because there's something about the bloody blood of Christ that I don't resonate with. I resonate more with what you just said, the continual crucifixion of what we need to be reborn throughout every moment, not just a one-time thing.
Yeah.
Can you help me?
Well, I'm not sure. Can you say a little bit more about the bloody blood of Christ?
Oh, you know, like people that get into prayers and it's like everything is done through the blood of Christ. And that's what, how we're so thankful and grateful for the blood of Christ. And there's something, I mean, I know there was probably blood involved, but there's something about that focus that sort of, I guess, say, turns me off, and I need to change my thinking, but I don't want to be, I don't know, it's just maybe many of us.
You know, Helene, these practices can help, I think, because it is a point of view, and of course, I think, you know, and that's one of the things the Sufis does, as Sufi does so well, is we really want to people to have their own spiritual path and interpretation. It's spiritual freedom. And so if that's the way, I mean, one could look at it, I don't know, that's an interesting term, the bloody blood of Christ, but it really means self-sacrifice, I think. And so maybe just hearing it in a different way is very interesting. And I don't know, you know, it's like I was talking, looking in what might be considered ugliness and seeing beauty. Joe and I are getting ready for some lifestyle changes. So we've been clearing out things, a lot of things. And some of those are photos, but I've been scanning them or taking photos of them. And I came across this letter of one of the beggars in India, and he had very bad leprosy. I mean, part of his hands were gone and one of his foot, the toes were gone. And, you know, but we became friends because I felt like the way to not be repulsed was to become friends with people that had this disease and to understand it better. And so and I also liked him. You could tell he had a good heart and, you know, and so over the years coming and going to India, we became friends and we would talk and I would ask him about, you know, he'd have new bandages and I'd ask him, may I see, you know, I wanted to see what was happening to his body. And he never really asked me for anything, you know, although he was, you know, his position was a beggar, we became friends. And so sometimes looking at those things or trying to grasp those things and wrestle with ourselves about things that might otherwise be repulsive can be very helpful in helping us to expand, to embrace that which we might not otherwise, you know, we might reject or refuse. Does that help at all?
Oh, absolutely. That's the whole point of the teaching that you had today, was that we see the good and the bad, we see the good and the evil and the evil and the good, is that we see everything from all different sides, not just from one particular point of view. Yes, it is very helpful. And I think that I guess if I were to catch myself getting into something, that I need to, you know, open up, do a practice, and not let my mind go there, because it's just a mind thing.
Yeah, it's just a wall that can come up, and it's just like, let it go, let it go. It's not easy, but one of the gurus in India where my sister goes is Swami Pujananda. Is that his name? Saraswati Pujananda, I don't know, I can't remember his name. But one of his quotes, he has these great quotes, and it was like, one of them is, accept, don't expect. How great is that? Accept, don't expect. So we can't always expect people to change their point of view, but we can accept that. We can accept that and let it be.
So true. And you know,
it's not easy, but we can remind, if we can be mindful, we can do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, Mother Teresa, I have this on my dryer on a magnetic thing, you know, that I did kind of a lamination thing, and all the different things that she said, that people, how they disappoint us, love them anyway. You know the one.
And I
how
do know the one. Yeah.
And just, you just goes down the whole list of stuff as humans, how we have problems with our co-humans, and we just love them anyway. And I need to go reread that.
It's a good one. It's a beautiful one. Yeah.
I'd like to see this Swami. He goes by Pooja Swamiji.
Pooja Swamiji,
yeah. On YouTube, it's about 30 minutes long. He has a video, A Day in the Light. And so if you just YouTube that, A Day in the Light, that'll come up. And he has all these little good ditties, like my sister was saying.
Yeah.
And he's a sweet man. And I've enjoyed him quite often. Yes, this is very nice connecting with all of you. I'm enjoying this myself too. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Let's see. Anyone else? Because now we're coming on.
Yeah, I wanted to add I'd like to add something briefly about the climate in the people's world of this USA now. Not only the paranoia, but the dichotomization of opinions. And I think you just took it to another level, not only to try to see the other's point of view and form some kind of acceptance or empathy, but also to be friends with it in some way, so we're not repulsed by those who have what appear to be opposite views. And that's the way towards finding some kind of healing, some kind of greater understanding, so we can come through this crisis in a better place than when we came into it.
Yeah, I think so too. And we have friends on Facebook, and I find that sometimes, I mean, people can get into a rant, they're very frustrated. And, you know, just saying, I understand, I get it. But remember, we're all in it together. It soothes people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to remind myself, I mean, this may sound extremely cavalier and simple-minded, but in some ways, this just sounds so silly. And you're going to probably think, what is she saying? But it's like, when people have their opinions, it's kind of like, who cares? Let them have it. Why do I need to win? Why do I have to be right? I mean, and I get that, you know, I don't know, maybe it was being a professor and having so many people rely on you, although I always would say it's not just me, it's all of us that make this happen and make it a success. But in a certain way, people do rely on you for a kind of expertise. So I can see how that's part of my nature, to feel like I have to have the answers, but I don't have all the answers. And who cares if I do? Or who cares if other people have their opinions? Who cares? Who is the one that cares about that? That's my little teeny self, right? Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Right? It's absolutely. Like my little self, it's like, okay, you know, it's like, okay, it's fine. It is fine. I'm trying very hard to learn. I don't have to correct people or make people see my point of view. It's a challenge, mm-hmm. but it's something to work with. And this class, these practices help us. Mm-hmm. Well, it's 12:15, ding, 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 ding. I just want to remind you, because I remember last class I didn't, so I will do it.
I
always get these bills where I'm hosting different websites for the benefit of the message, and if you want to help defray some of those expenses, think about a donation, and we'll send that link out. And Facebook also has a link where it's just click and donate a little money. You can do it through a credit card or a PayPal account. Every little bit counts, and you'd be surprised how those small amounts add up. So your generosity would be appreciated if you get something out of the class, maybe give a little something back. And so I wanted to be sure to say that. And I know we have some birthdays this month, one of which is Gemma, who is really my right hand, you know, those deities where they have all these arms. Well, Gemma's behind me and her arms are coming out there. That's how I can get so many things done. And others have stepped up that are on the Zoom call as well. I know Shamsuddin's been willing, and I don't know, I thought I saw Nurse Lima for a little while, and I know Guyon and Hakima. There's a lot of you that have been helpful, but I wanted to just wish Gemma happy, happy birthday. This will be one you won't forget, I think. First of all, you get to retire, and second of all, you're celebrating at home, not going out, but I know that you and Hamid will have a beautiful, Tom, your husband, Hamid, will have a beautiful celebration all the same, and I wanted to wish you a very happy birthday. And anyone else that may have a birthday this month, happy, happy birthday, and love to you all.
Nuria.
Yes.
Nuria. Mrs. Shamsuddin, yes. Could I just share a short poem before we go?
Of course, please do, Shams.
This was written this morning. I usually go to bed early and get up, you know, this was like 3 o'clock or something this morning. So
this is yours then, this is your writing. Correct?
Yes. Okay. Correct. This is called Welcome Friend. Welcome Friend, come share a cup from the welling well. We will speak of simple things, of silly things, of heartfelt things. The ancient ones call this sobet. Look at this water. It is the mysterious miracle of flowing, a medium of growing. One of the elementals, water is the essence of the power of surrender. Nothing stops its flow. Sham says, praise the Holy One for this fellowship of the presence of bliss. And I had this insight because it is so good to see all these wonderful beings that I have danced and sung with. I realized we are the dancing choir. Every time we get together, we worship God in this choir thing where we get to move to it too.
Yeah.
Praise God. I'm done.
Praise God. Thank you so much. That's beautiful. We are indeed.